This is a production of Cornell University.
Welcome back to the Shortcut Early Bird Podcast. It's the 25th edition this year. We're joined, as always, by Dr. Frank Rossi. And Frank, last week we were talking about the demise of summer, and we might have been a little bit early on that prediction here, because this upcoming weekend, even 2 weeks projected, looks like it's going to be a little bit warmer and maybe a little bit drier, right?
That's right, Carl. Art DiGaetano from the Northeast Climate Center made it very clear. We're going to have some warm and dry conditions for the next couple of weeks. And that's something that we got used to, I think. We said in the past, warm, dry, or warm falls have been common up here. We didn't expect it, right, because it's been so cool.
That's right.
So he's talking 6 degrees above normal. I think we were well into the 80s. Fairly recently here in upstate New York. And one of the things that that brings to mind is the timing of our late season fertilizers. And we were lucky enough to have Doug Soldat join us on the call this week, but really sort of covered the broad bases of late season fertilization and the big macronutrients, Carl. So where do you want to start?
Yeah, so, you know, we think of those macronutrients, nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. And why don't we start with nitrogen? You know, Doug is kind of... you know, come up with some new ways of thinking on how we want to approach nitrogen fertilization in the fall.
That's right. And we played around with this a bunch of years ago. It came up primarily because there were water quality concerns. Hmm. And Doug, as he said, has been collecting clippings for a really long time and finding that really in lawn situations, maybe the plants are taking out about a half a pound of N per month during the growing season. Maybe more during the peak season, but if you look at growth potential and how the plants are going to slow down into the fall, about a half a pound a month. So if you're thinking about fertilizing with soluble sources of N, now's a good time to sort of get that half a pound down. Mm-hmm. And by the time in some areas where it's warm now, if you got that half a pound down, you get that growth out for the next month. And then the plant would wean itself off into the winter and still green up fairly adequately come spring. And so downstate where it's a little bit warmer, we generally recommend they can get by until mid-October. But I don't hear anybody saying that we need to wait until after Thanksgiving and put on a full pound of N to get the green up we expect in the spring. There's lots of ways to get that now coming earlier. Thinking about your soluble and slow release sources, thinking about the half a pound N soluble target so that you minimize water quality concerns and you get good fall growth and that you get a nice start in the spring. And again, a lot of this, as we said, is for lawns. Most of the golf guys have gone to light frequent fertilization. If they're doing fairways, hopefully they're not going very late. Because as we've learned, it's sort of a waste of fertilizer that then could create some water quality concerns. Yeah. And with that as a backdrop, right, it brought up the issue of phosphorus.
Yeah, and so when we think about phosphorus, we definitely think about, you know, that contributing to eutrophication and lakes and where that all accumulates. And Doug said something interesting about what he's looked at with phosphorus concentrations in water after some phosphorus bans up there in his neck of the woods.
That's right. And Minnesota and Wisconsin were some of the earliest areas to ban phosphorus from lawn fertilizers. And they've been looking at phosphorus levels in the lake and finding that they're not getting better. So we're 10 to 12 years out. Doug says in the areas where he is, they've looked at agricultural sources, urban sources, or atmospheric sources. They're doing everything they can to limit those sources. And it doesn't appear that the eutrophication issues in many of the lakes are getting better. And he's talking about this legacy phosphorus, this phosphorus that's, you know, been applied for a long time that now, because it's very persistent in the soil at the surface, it's persistent in the environment. He even made the comment that carp are stirring it up on the bottoms of the lakes out there. So I think it warrants us as a turf industry to really be mindful. Well, you know, it doesn't cost me a lot to put that nutrient on. And well, it's not going anywhere. It's staying there. And I think sometimes we lose sight of the long-term potential impacts that dispersing anything into the environment that the environment is ultimately going to have to deal with. We're finding now that phosphorus is something that has a legacy to it. Now, thankfully, you know, smart guys like Doug and Marty Petrovic, our emeritus professor here, asked those questions early on. We were fortunate when Micah Woods was here to start asking potassium questions Doug has continued. So let's make that transition to that last macronutrient.
Yeah, potassium. And Doug was investigating kind of where the plant is getting its potassium from. And he was noticing that the soil tests were not matching up with the potassium concentrations he was finding in the plant. This plant was getting potassium when he was never even applying it on his plots. And it turns out that's coming from a source we wouldn't necessarily think it would come from.
That's correct. Every time you top dress with sand particles that are of potassium origin, feldspar, apatite, there's a number of them that exist in the bedrock or in sand where we take it from. And it appears that bentgrass in particular has the ability to mineralize potassium from those sand grains and make it available for its use. And again, that's a separation between bentgrass and annual bluegrass, where it appears that in the absence of potassium, bentgrass is slightly weaker. We see problems with winter injury associated with that, and we see problems with anthracnose associated with that. On the other hand, it looks like potassium levels, where he hasn't been putting them on bentgrass greens, he has the least amount of winter damage, the least amount of snow mold. So one of the things I think we're looking at here is something so bizarre, like, well, we train students to say sand-based systems have low cation exchange and therefore need more potassium applied. And yet it appears that loamy soil systems that don't have a lot of particulate potassium in sand grain size that's not there for mineralizable stuff might have a different potassium need than sand might, depending on the grass. Now, I'm not going to tell anybody they should run out on their home lawn and put out potassium, because I still think there's plenty of it in organic matter and other sources that are readily available in lawn situations where you're not really, well, if you're not removing clippings, the potassium's got nowhere to go. So you're just recycling it through the organic matter. I cannot believe that we're here in 2017 learning something so revolutionary about turf nutrition that it was never considered before. And it appears now that after all these years, we found a plant that can actually mineralize what we thought was unavailable. And it further complicates the questions of soil testing and the value that they might bring, which will be a conversation for a whole nother day, Carl.
Yep, but for today, that'll do it for this episode, this thought-provoking episode of the Shortcut Early Bird Podcast. As always, follow us on Facebook and Twitter for weekly updates. We'll see you next week.
This has been a production of Cornell University, on the web at cornell.edu.